walked into a bar. An argument ensued about who the GOATs are. The seed was a thought that would turn into a pod. Now fans worldwide say, not a bad job, the ad hoc gab squad who chronicles the vanguard of hip-hop at large. Rap tastes slacked off, don't need to be mad, dog. Look no further, it's the dad bod. Rap, ha, ha, ha.
Dad Bod Rap Pod. What's going on, folks? It's your boy, Damone Carter, aka Dim One. Me and the bros are still on our summer break, enjoying the time off, but not leaving you guys totally high and dry. This week we have another DBRP classic episode, our conversation with Prince Marky D, which we'll get to in just a bit. But first, I want to shout out everyone who listened to the Akinelli episode last week. It was sort of an open question among us if rerunning some of the older episodes from the early seasons when the listenership wasn't quite what it is now would bear any fruit, if there was anybody out there that would want to listen to that. And last week proved that there are indeed folks who want to listen to it, probably didn't catch it the first time. And we thank you for tapping in. We've got some more of these classic conversations coming up. And then we will be back the week of July 10th with new episodes. But yeah, shout out to everybody who rocked with the Akinelli episode. That was good times. Kind of went down memory lane while listening to that. So, yeah, this week we've got another classic episode. Before we get to that, just want to let folks know, if you're listening to this in real time on Friday, June 23rd, we do have the Eastside Record Swap coming up on June 24th. That will be tomorrow for you in real time if you're listening to this in some other part of the space-time continuum. Just feel free to fast forward. But this is our second Eastside Record Swap. It'll be going down at the School of Arts and Culture in San Jose, California, in the heart of the Eastside. Saturday, June 24th, 4 to 9 p.m., Needle to the Groove, the homies, will be selling vinyl along with other local vinyl vendors. And the special guest for this iteration of the Eastside Record Swap is none other than Sean Kantrowitz, who will be bringing a live version of his Questions hip hop trivia game to the Record Swap. You'll be able to play on your phones. We're going to have some prizes. And we also have a very special guest who is going to be kind of like the final boss. If you make it to the last round of the Questions hip hop trivia game, you will have to beat the final boss in order to win the prize. And you'll have to be there to see who the final boss is. So once again, Eastside Record Swap, Friday, June 24th at the School of Arts and Culture at Mexican Heritage Plaza in the heart of East San Jose. Pull up. It's going to be good times. Dave Ma will be spinning. Nate will be spinning. My man's Worldwise will be on the decks. It's going to be a fun hip-hop afternoon. But that's not the only live event that we got going on. Also, July 8th, Nate, Dave, and myself will be hosting a book talk with GOAT A&R Dante Ross at Amoeba Records in Berkeley. He's going to be signing books. I hear Dell is going to perform some joints that Dante produced as part of the SD50s. DJ Plattern will be on the decks. It's going to be super dope. If you haven't already, please get a copy of Dante Ross's book, his memoir, Son of the City. I'm about 2/3 of the way into it. And the stories that he shares about the golden era and being, you know, embedded with the Beastie Boys and Run DMC and being an A&R and being, you know, with De La Soul and signing KMD and his relationship with Search and Pete Nice. I mean, just so many stories as well. This is very compelling personal narrative weaved into it. It's a really good book. So you can cop it in all the places that you usually cop books. You can also get a copy the day of. They'll be selling them at Amoeba, apparently. So both for the Record Swap and for the Son of the City Book Talk, you can find more details on our social media platforms. That's at Dad Bod Rap Pod on Twitter and at Dad Bod Rap Pod on Instagram. You know, it's kind of cliche to say, but we outside, you know what I mean? We're not just podcasters. We're out here in real life. Super humble to be even a part of something with somebody as cool as Dante Ross. So be on the lookout for that. We out here, if you're in the Bay, Bay adjacent. But let's talk a little bit about this week's episode. Again, it's a DRP classic interview with the late, great Prince Markie D, who came to prominence as a member of the Fat Boys. For somebody as old as I am, who bought the Fat Boys' single Wipeout, which is their collab with the Beach Boys, I bought that on 45 at Kmart. I want to say, was that 86, 87 maybe? Maybe 88. Just to give you a sense of like how huge the Fat Boys were at that time. And Prince Markie D gave us a great interview, talked about the Fresh Fest years and what it was like to basically bring rap music into the mainstream. And we're very grateful to have some of his time. Unfortunately, Prince Markie D died way too young at the age of 52. He died on February 18th, 2021. And this podcast has been a blessing in many ways for us as fans to kind of get to experience and talk to people who are part of history. But the more we've done it and the longer the run has gone on, we've realized that it's also a document. So we've had some folks who we've talked to have since passed on. And only then did we learn that, you know, there aren't a lot of interviews with some of these folks, and Prince Markie D is one of those people. So, you know, we're just super grateful that we got to talk to him when we did. He was working with Akinelli at the time at that Miami strip club. That's kind of the connection of last week and this week. And, you know, just a tragic loss. But we're very, again, just grateful to have him on our program. And he gives a great interview. So let's get into it. This is our DBRP classic interview with Prince Markie D. Dad Bod Rap Pod, another dope guest, a person, seminal figure in hip hop history. We want to welcome to the program Prince Markie D. How you doing, man?
Oh, you're making me blush, man. I'm great. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Living. So yeah, we want to get into it, man. Obviously, growing up, a guy of a certain age here, the Fat Boys were... Yes. A seminal rap act at the time, and I was talking to the guys off air. You guys were a huge group, figuratively and literally, when rap was just getting started. Like, you were a part of that first wave. Like, what was that like when you were first like coming out of the box and rap itself was just becoming a national thing? Like, what was that wave like?
Well, what I love the most about the era that we came out in, we weren't like one of the first rap groups to come on, because there was a ton of you know, legends that came before us. But we would happen to be blessed enough to be one of the first rap groups to expose it to the masses.
Yeah,
that's what was, you know, special about what we did. Us, Run DMC, Houdini, you know, all those Fresh Best tours that we did. I can remember rolling in the cities and nobody even heard of us. And the 2 days, 3 days after we leave the city, you see the record sales, they register, you know?
Right.
And I remember performing in certain cities and being on stage and looking down at the audience and seeing kids in the audience. And they're like, well, this is something I could do. This is something I can make money doing, you know? So it was real. It's a real honor. And it's real special to me to be able to be the one to kind of like, you know, expose it to the masses.
Who was the wildest act on the Fresh Fest tours? Like, who was the one that was the wildest, most party driven act that was on tour with y'all?
Honestly, all of us were. We were animals, man. Were animals, and it was like a family. Like, you know, when we went on tour, like, you know, we knew Run before the tours. We knew Houdini before the tours. So when they all put us together to actually do the tours, it was like, oh, we're gonna lose our minds. And I remember that whole era, like those years. In from like maybe 85, you know, on to 88, 89, we were home maybe 2 months out of the year. Consistently on the road, and we just grew to be a big, you know, I remember having like fist fights with Run. Jam Master Jay coming in between us and being like, y'all niggas is brothers. What the fuck is wrong with y'all? Y'all better shake hands right now. Like, I remember things like that, you know, like we were really a family and we were off the chain, man. It was just like, I mean, you hear all those rock and roll stories. They had nothing on the hip hop stories.
Do you have,
you know,
any
sex, drugs, more sex, you know, more drugs? I mean, it was just insane, man. It's nothing like it is today. You know, nothing. I feel sorry for the artists of today because they really don't get to appreciate like that real, real road, grassroots promotion, like really getting out there and promoting your shit and make, you know, working hard to really, you know, become something, you know. But I also, alongside that, I also say that it was kind of easy for us since we were some of the, you know, the first ones to kind of get out there. Mm-hmm. People were, you know, being attached to us quickly. So it was a good feeling, man. It was a good time, really good time.
Do you have any crazy tour stories that you, I mean, you mentioned a couple crazy things already, but do you have any specific stories you can share with us?
Oh, man, where do I start? I mean, shit, specific stories. I mean, I remember us, like the entire Fresh Fest tour, fighting like a group of guys from Cleveland, Ohio, like that was mad because all their girlfriends came to, whenever we performed. When we were on stage, we would always yell out, after party at the Hilton. And that's so all the girls knew where we were staying at. By the time we got to the hotel, the lobby is flooded with girls. Mm-hmm. So within 10, 15 minutes, all the girls is in somebody's room or they're, you know, doing something or wilding or whatever. Like 30 guys came looking for their girlfriends. And I remember like all out brawl in the lobby, like really brawl. I remember like, you know, like people getting knocked out and you know, we ended up winning, like, and we were just like, almost like, what's that freaking movie? The Warriors at the end. We were just like, yeah. You know, like kicking them out the door. I mean, I have stories that that I really can't even tell you. Like,
right. The best ones. Yeah.
No, it's just so insane. Like, you know what I mean? Like what? One good story that sticks in my head though. I remember we were touring in the South, and Buff, you know, RIP Buff, he would always want to go to McDonald's. So we started calling McDonald's Mickey D's. So I remember going to radio stations and being like, we just left Mickey D's and, you know, and all this stuff, and nobody ever heard of it. And then a few years later, we hear McDonald's starting to promote that thing as Mickey D's, you know. And we love to take credit for that. But we love, in particular, love to take credit for starting that Mickey D's trend. We just should have had our lawyers on it on top of it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You need the royalties. Oh, wow.
Wow.
Very on brand for the group.
that's crazy.
But I mean, as I sit here, you know, tons of stories come to mind. But it was just an amazing time being on the road back then, you know, from the performances. I mean, I remember walking into the Omni in Atlanta. I don't know if it's still up, but Run and I walked in backstage, and it was right before, you know, the shows to start, and the place was completely sold out. And there were like 5,000 people outside. They couldn't get inside. Wow. And we're looking around. And then I look at Run. And he looks at me. And we're like, yo, they're here to see us? Like, yo, this is insane. Like, we just couldn't comprehend it. You know, when I started rapping, we won a contest to, you know, for the record deal. We didn't record demos and try to get a record deal. We just wanted, honestly, if you ever seen Crush Group, the movie before,
yeah.
That's kind of portrays really what we thought. We just wanted the equipment. We just wanted the DJ equipment so we could DJ on our block and stuff like that. We really weren't really concerned with winning the first prize, which is a record contract. We didn't know the implications of, you know, what it could do for our lives. And I remember my mother coming to me one day and going, because I used to play high school football. I remember her coming to me and Mark, so, you know, they want to take you on tour to Europe. You know, it's a 6-month tour. But of course, you're going to have to be, you know, homeschooled. You have to be, you know, sent with a tutor. So you're going to have to stop playing football. And I remember like making that decision, like, damn, all right, let's do it. Let's, you know, let's try it. And then the next thing you know, we're in Europe and, you know, we blew up in Europe before we blew up here, actually. Wow. You know, we were selling out places in Europe. And it was just an amazing, amazing time doing commercials and, you know, going to all these TV shows in Europe and seeing the different countries. And I remember walking in, we were in Italy, and they took us to a restaurant, and the door on the restaurant was a wooden door. It was a foot thick. The door itself was like 100 years old. I remember walking inside, opening that door, and we sat down at the table to eat. And this big lady comes out, and she's like, I'm thinking she's about to ask me what I want to eat. She goes, you're having the pasta pozole. You're having the tiki alla fresco. She's telling us what we're eating. It's just like, it's no ordering in this place, you know? So it's like those type of experiences that cling to me, you know, that make me smile when I think about those times, man. They were really great, man.
Dope. What do you consider to be the Fat Boy's best work?
Album or record or song?
You tell me. What's the best thing you guys did together?
My personal favorite is a tie between Jailhouse Rap and Can You Feel It. Mm. Those are just my personal favorites. And to me, our first album was the best because, you know, that was the spark. That was, you know, that was what started it off, you know, for us. Mm. You know, it just so many fond memories of recording in the studio. You know, after I left the Fat Boys, I had a really good career, the producer and songwriter. And I credit that to the first album, watching Curtis Blow produce our album and asking questions and kind of figure out, you know, how to work the studio and the creative part of it, you know. And I never took it like just come in the studio, write your rhymes down, spit them and get out, get back on the road.
Right.
I always wanted to be involved in A to B, C to D, and so on and so forth, you know. So, you know, that album, you know, reminds me of like the roots of my production and songwriting times. So that one's got to be, you know, pretty special for me.
So it got to the point where you guys were in movies. Like, what was the jump off? Because like you're on the Fresh Fest tour, you guys drop an album. How do you go from there to being, you know, obviously you're in Crush Groove, and then like how does Disorderlies come about? Like, because you guys were huge at that point.
Well, Disorderlies. We got Disorderlies because of our performance in Crush Groove. Mm. It was the same company that produced it, Warner Brothers. Okay. They saw our, you know, performance in Crush Groove, and they were like, these guys got their own fucking movie.
Yeah.
So we ended up signing a 3-picture deal with Warner Brothers.
Wow.
The first movie was Disorderlies. The second movie was going to be called Fat Tuesday, and it was a horror comedy in New Orleans we were supposed to shoot. It didn't end up happening because of me ended up leaving the group, and then they tried to get me to come back. And when I came back, I found out the only reason they wanted me back was because Warner Brothers is like, all three original guys are we're not doing it. Mm. And they were kind of like, you know, had my arm tied behind my back, you know, in a sense, you know, financially over my head. They were like, we're going to give you your money when we want to give it to you. Not, you know, not when you, you know, when you ask for it. We'll. And I just didn't like that. So I was like, all right, I'll just wait until the date where you have to give me my money. And in the meantime, I don't want to be in the group anymore. Mm. And I ended up leaving. And miraculously, like 2 weeks later, I'm in the mall going, you know, shopping for sneakers. And I run into this guy by the name of Father MC.
Yeah.
And Father MC was one of the first rappers on Uptown Records.
Yep.
And he, you know, when I ran into him, he wanted me to rap on a song with him. And I was like, well, we produce. Me and my partner Corey, we produce records. So he was like, come on, look. We went right to the house that day and recorded this record called Treat Them Like They Want to Be Treated, which was like his big first hit. And I remember, you know, Diddy coming in and signing Jodeci and like, yo, let's put Jodeci on the song. All right. Put him on the song. And, you know, it was out of here after that, you know. But yeah, I don't need to get so far away from the movie aspect of it. But, the, you know, the movie thing was basically just that, you know. They loved the way we performed in Crush Groove.
Right.
They wanted to give us our own movie. It was an amazing opportunity. The memory is so amazing to me that actually in 6 months, I'm going to start getting back into film and TV. Oh. So I'm going to be making a move from Florida to Cali to get back out there to start, you know, getting my feet wet. You know, I still have a lot of friends in movie production and, okay, you know, movies and all that. So I'm going to start, you know, reaching out to some people and, you know, seeing what the vibe is like and seeing if that could, you know, begin to happen for me again.
That's super dope. So you left the Fat Boys. You had your production career, but you also had a hit with Swing My Way. That was a dope. That was a dope record. Yeah, like, how'd that come about?
I was blessed to have a number one single on Billboard with that record. Mm. You know, in the rap category. That record was, you know, after we signed our deal, Father MC, we produced a bunch of other acts for Uptown, but one of the biggest acts we produced for Uptown was Mary J. Blige. We did her first album. Hmm. So we did four songs on her first album. We did Real Love, which was like a, you know, a breakout hit. We did Sweet Thing, which we just reproduced. We didn't write that, of course. That's a Shaka song, Shaka Khan. Yeah. And we did two other songs for her album. So I remember getting a call one day from Helen. Helen was Tommy Mottola's assistant at Sony Music when Tommy was president of Sony. And I remember like, hey, I'm Mark Morales. I'm like, yeah, this is Mark. This is Helen from Tommy Mottola's office. He wants to know if you're coming tomorrow at 1 p.m. He wants to meet with you guys. I'm like, yeah, what's your number? I was like, we'll be there. Click, and I hung up the phone. I go upstairs with my partner, Corey, like, yo, somebody just called and said that Tommy Mottola wants to meet with us. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Somebody told me to go and call back. And when I called back, they said, Tommy Mottola's office? I'm like, oh, shit, this is real. So basically what happened was Mariah Carey loved the song Real Love that we did for Mary. So she pressured Tommy into giving us the deal.
Wow.
And when he signed us, it was just, imagine, this is exactly how it happened. We went to his office, we sit down. Tommy goes, hey, guys, how you doing? So let me just ask you straight up. What do you guys want? I'm like, well, you know, we're trying to start a record label. You know, he goes, done. What else do you want? I'm like, well, wow, you know, we want to build our own studio so we don't have to rent studios. And we get done. Give me something harder. This is exactly what he says.
Wow.
Give me something hard. Well, we want some cash, of course. Listen, I'll give you guys anything you want. The only thing that I don't want to happen is if I find out you go to somebody else and we'll try to start a bidding war, then I'll back out of it. I don't want nothing to do with it. Whoa. So within a week, we were breaking ground on our studio. So we signed a really big deal with Tommy. And that the first project that we put out was my free album, which had Typical Reason, Swing My Way on it. So that's kind of how that came about. I was going to be the first artist. And then after the first artist, I got tired of being an artist. I did put out another album through a deal after we left Sony. We signed with Motown. I put out another album with Motown, but at that point I was too old, too dead to be, you know, still rapping. So, you know, I just didn't want to do it anymore at that point. Yeah. So we ended up clicking with, you know, we still had our situation with Sony. So, you know, we worked a lot with, on K-Lo's first album, you know, we kind of put all that together. My partner Corey, he's the one that headed everything. We did the J-Lo record. We did, you know, more songs for Mariah. I mean, it was just one after another. We were just working, you know. It was great. The production part of my career, I always feel like the Fat Boys were the stepping stone to me being a writer producer. Mm-hmm. You know, so but that was the story of Free. Yeah,
so there's been a lot of a controversy recently with De La Soul and kind of their initial deal with Tommy Boy and the whole streaming thing that's come about, which I'm sure you've heard about. Kind of what's your take on artists?
I'd be lying to you if I heard about it. I didn't hear about it. Can you break it down real quick?
Oh, okay. So apparently 3 Feet High and Rising hasn't been available to stream on Spotify and all that kind of stuff.
The first four records.
The first four records of De La Soul's career wasn't the Tommy Boy records they did. And so Tommy Boy is trying to get it back onto the streams, but I guess they're taking 90% of that revenue and De La Soul's only getting 10%. So De La Soul went on a very public kind of like, hey, this isn't right. Jay-Z and Tidal have agreed not to stream it until they get the situation right. So as someone who's been in the industry for a while, just kind of wanted to get your general take on that, or just how you feel about those type of situations.
Well, you know, of course, there's going to be two sides to every story, you know, but without knowing all the facts,
right.
I mean, you got to be fair, you know, you have to be, especially with the artists, you know, you have to be fair with the artists, and, you know, you have to be able to look at yourself in the mirror in the morning and really be, if you can look at yourself in the mirror in the morning and be comfortable with giving these guys who are pioneers in this business, you know, who you know, did so much for hip hop, and really look yourself in the mirror and say, I'm taking 90% and giving them 10%.
Right.
That's wrong. That's just, you know, that's just, it's not right. You know? So, you know, my feelings are, I look at, you know, from my point of view, I look at it like, damn, like, you know, I wanna call the guys with the dreads up, and we need to go pay a visit to them.
Pull up one you time know? For De La. Yeah, no, I hear you. But you know, it seems like you've definitely maneuvered through the industry in your career. What do you got going on right now? I know you mentioned trying to get back into film. Kind of what are you getting into these days?
Well, right now, I'm partners with Akinelli. You know Akinelli, of course. Yes. Mr. Put it in your mouth.
Yes, sir.
Akinelli owns a club. It's a restaurant / bar / club on Ocean Drive. He has the honor of being the only Black-owned business on Ocean Drive.
Wow.
Not on Washington, not on Collins Avenue, on Ocean Drive.
Right.
And, you know, we're partners in the business. Nice. And we're running a successful business right now. But this will be our fourth year coming up in November. Oh, I'm sorry, September will be our four years we've been doing this. So it's pretty much getting to the point where it's on cruise control, where nice. We can kind of step away from it and leave key people in charge to do what they have to do. And we're going to be expanding our horizons with some same situation that we have on Ocean Drive in a couple of other cities.
Oh, nice.
But apart from that, like, you know, like I mentioned earlier, like one of my goals, you know, has always been to get back into film and TV. And I just have a thing for it. Just the experience of shooting Crush Groove and really shooting Disorderlies really, you know, gave me the itch for it. Just at the time when we shot it, we didn't know how much power we had, you know, like we just thought that our managers had all the power. You know, we didn't know nothing. They kept us in the dark about everything. They would bring contracts to us. I had my attorney look over the contract, make sure it was fair. But as far as how we got to that contract, we were never allowed to be in part of that. You know, so we didn't know if we could ask for more. We didn't know any situations whatsoever regarding. So with that, with that being said, when we shot Disorderlies, it was an amazing experience, you know, like just being behind the camera. It was the same itch that I had from watching Curtis Blow produce records. Now I have that. It gave me that same itch to be behind the camera, in front of the camera, you know, going to see dailies, you know, music, scoring, all types of things like that, you know. And it was something that I had never really advanced and did because, like I said, we just didn't know we could. Like, right. Look at this, for instance. Back in the days, like 1988, there's a guy named Fresh Gordon in Brooklyn. Fresh Gordon was, he had a couple of songs out, you know, New York hip hop songs out, but he was mainly a producer. Gordon used to have this guy named Jazz and Jay-Z come to his house every day. They used to come over, he'd do beats for them, and I'd be there, we'd all be together, we'd all cool. Right. Like, and I remember sitting there and you know, hearing Jay-Z rap, and he used to want to get on these mixtapes that we used to do, me and Jazz used to do. And I used to always tell him, nah, nigga, you ain't ready yet. Like, you're not, you know, like, step your game up a little more, then you can get on it. But really, I loved his voice, I loved his skill, everything. I had no idea. If I had any clue that I could take this guy and sign him and take get him, I would have done it.
Yeah. Right.
But we just were kept in the dark about things like that. We didn't know we had that type of power. Mm. And now it's a different world now. You know, it's a completely different world now. Like, you know, the artist controls, you know, most of it now. So, you know, I want to get back into that film. I want to get back into that, you know, the TV, you know, writing, all of that stuff. So California is the Mecca. So, you know, that's where I'm going to head to.
There it is.
Perfect.
Well, hey, we really appreciate you making the time to talk with us. Prince Marky D.
Anytime.
Legendary hip hop artist. What's the name of the spot on Ocean in Miami?
Oh, it's called V Live, Venue Live. Mm. It's on Ocean between 13th and 14th. We're on the second floor. Come check us out if you're in Miami Beach, especially it's spring break now, so we're about to really take off.
Hey, there it is, man. Hey, we really appreciate your time, bro.
Thank you, man. God bless you guys, man.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Peace. Check it out. Yeah, yeah. Your man.